Let's have the Judiciary Committee come to order. It's about 1:32 on the afternoon of Friday, March 19th, 2010. And we are lacking a quorum, but we do have Senator Wilikowski here, myself, Senator French. Senator Egan will be along. I know he's busy with capital budget matters and other items of that nature. Senator Coghill's out of town. Senator McGuire's out of town. I regret that. We do have the gavel-to-gavel camera here, which is maybe the most valuable thing you can have when you're trying to make a good presentation. This will go out statewide to folks who follow the presentation. We are lucky to have the Women's Summit in town, and in speaking with the organizers, we agreed to give some time to you today, this afternoon, to come and talk to us and the rest of the state about the issues that you've been discussing during the summit this week. So we've got a fair amount of time. We've got you all here. Want to go ahead and turn it over to Ms. Pate, and you can introduce yourself, tell us what organization you're from, and I'll let you divide up your time as you see fit. So welcome, and it's nice to have you here in the committee.
Thank you. And the organizers of the Women's Summit would like to extend their thanks for making this opportunity available. Good afternoon. My name is Laurie Morton. I'm the program coordinator for the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. I'm also the Violence Against Women Act State STOP Administrator for this Alaska. STOP, which stands for Services, Training, Officers, and Prosecutors, is a federal funding stream through which the Council supports various projects to strengthen Alaska's response to domestic violence and sexual assault. Since STOP funds first became available to states in 1996, Alaska has focused on expanding legal advocacy and legal services to victims. So I appreciate this opportunity to advise you of our progress and let you know what still needs to be done. Battered women seeking to safeguard themselves against recurring violence are often uninformed about legal resources that are available to facilitate an end to the violence being perpetrated against them. Many victims of sexual assault are also unfamiliar with the justice system and the way in which cases are handled. Unfortunately, when victims have evaluated their options and elected the legal remedies best suited to meet their needs, they often face legal proceedings without the benefit of counsel. You will hear today from attorneys and a legal advocate on the front line. Over the past 14 years, Carrie Robinson, the Legal Advocacy Project Director, has developed a nationally recognized project. The LAP provides training and technical assistance to legal advocates based in community victim service agencies, runs an information and referral hotline staffed by volunteer attorneys, edits and publishes the Alaska Women's Legal Rights Handbook, and coordinates the pro bono program. Ann Bennett works as a legal advocate at Juno's victim service agency, AWARE, aiding women in abuse and rape emergencies. Jennifer King is a staff attorney with the pro bono program. The pro bono program screens and accepts case referrals from community victim service programs across the state, matching pro bono attorneys with victims in need. They mentor attorneys willing to take on pro bono cases, and they train attorneys through an annual continuing legal education conference to better equip them to handle these often complex cases. As a board member of the Alaska Immigration Justice Project, Ms. Robinson will also briefly discuss the legal assistance available to immigrant victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. After their presentations, there will be hopefully time for questions and answer period. And at that time, Christine Pate, the director of the pro bono program, will be available. And we'd like to give her an extra thanks for taking time for her vacation in Hawaii to join us.
A massive sacrifice.
So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Ms. Carrie Robinson, and she's on teleconference.
We're happy to have you here. And thank you, Ms. Morton. And sorry about the mix-up with your name. I apologize.
No problem.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. This is Carrie Robinson. I'm the director and staff attorney with the Legal Advocacy Project, and I apologize for not being there in person, but I'm up here for my son's state hockey tournament. We want to thank you for this opportunity to present vital information on the civil legal needs for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. Victims of domestic violence and sexual assault and their advocates continue to identify the need for civil legal representation as a top priority to meet victims' needs within the state, as reported to us by our 18-member domestic violence and sexual assault programs all across the state. The mission of the ANDVSA Legal Advocacy Project is to increase the ability of victims of domestic violence and sexual assault to effectively access and participate in the civil and criminal justice systems. As you are well aware, Alaska unfortunately has some of the highest rates of domestic violence and sexual assault in the nation. Our project is committed to ensuring that every child has a safe home or a safe place to go. A landmark study by economists found that the increased provision of legal services for victims was critical to reducing domestic violence rates. The study found that because legal services help victims with practical matters such as protective orders, custody, and child support, this presents victims with real long-term options to enhance their safety. For the past 12 years, the Network's Legal Advocacy Project and the Alaska Immigration Justice Project have partnered with Alaska Legal Services to meet these critical legal needs for victims. Unfortunately, the demand for legal services in our state has exceeded the resources of legal service providers within Alaska. Just in the past 6 months, we have seen a 70% increase in the number of referrals for victims needing help with family law issues such as safe custody and visitation. Our project helps break the cycle of violence by creating safe custody arrangements and visitation. We know that children who witness abuse are more likely to exhibit behavioral and physical health problems, including anxiety, depression, and violence toward peers. Preventing future violence and keeping families safe is a wise investment in Alaska's future. I am now going to turn it over to Ann Bennett, who is a legal advocate with the Aware Shelter. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Robinson. And maybe Ms. Bennett's going to answer this question, but I guess my, at least something that comes to mind is, what's the mismatch between the demand and the resources? How many pro bono attorneys, how many volunteer pro bono attorneys do you have, and how many cases are they sort of forced to turn down every week through a lack of resources?
Right. Thank you. That's a great question. With our project, we have three staff attorneys, but we only have about 1.5 attorneys who actually have active cases. And we have approximately 300 volunteer attorneys with our project, although it's not enough to meet the need. Since our project started, we have had 2,000 referrals in needing help with legal assistance. In addition to our project, there's also Alaska Legal Services. But again, they've had cuts at the federal level, and although they receive some state funding, it's just not enough to meet the need.
Thank you. Ms. Bennett, welcome.
Hi, thank you for allowing me to come speak to both of you today. I'm really pleased to be here. I just came out of a pretty adrenaline-filled morning, so I'm going to try to compose and calm myself enough to speak clearly, but I'm the legal advocate at Aware here in Juneau, and I meet with approximately 30 to 40 program participants per month having legal questions or legal needs. They come in a variety of issues, the most important one being safety. They may need help with a protective order for stalking, sexual assault, or domestic violence. Unfortunately, there's divorce and custody issues that are often associated with that as they leave the relationship. I also work with immigrants on occasion on passport, visa issues, their legal status here in the United States, and then a variety of other issues, bankruptcy, wills, landlord-tenant things, just a variety of legal questions that they might have. At Aware, as statewide, I believe we are part of the sexual assault response team. So when a woman comes into the hospital who's been sexually assaulted, we respond and provide services there, I guess you'd say. But part of my job as a legal advocate is to follow up on those and help facilitate communication between that victim and the Investigating Law Enforcement, Prosecuting Attorneys, and the Victims of Violent Crimes Compensation Board. I also try to follow those victims and provide support through the criminal justice system, attending hearings, accompanying them, sitting with them if they have to come in to testify in the trial or a grand jury. Most of the women I do work with, though, or program participants, are victims of domestic abuse. And so really what they're looking for, they're coming in the door very shaken, very fearful. They're looking for a safe place where we can just, where it tries to provide that so that we can discuss the options of what could work for them in the future to get both themselves and their children, if involved, to safety. I also work with women whose abusers have been arrested and are navigating through the criminal justice system, and help explain that process and do similar to the sexual assault victims, accompany them to court or help them write a victim statement, whatever needs to be done. So mainly, whether it be a civil case or a criminal case, my job is to explain the legal system, provide support as they work through those changes that they have to make, which are often pretty difficult, in order to get themselves to safety. And I also provide referrals for legal representation. These cases are really complicated, as you can imagine, and so I'm not an attorney. I often need to consult with an attorney, and I feel really gifted that there are attorneys through the pro bono program and through Alaska Legal Services, and they've been very gracious to answer questions. They're responsive. They're quick to respond, which is often important, and provide me with the information I can pass on to the program participants that are aware to help, you know, give them options on what to do. As Carrie mentioned, the need is usually far exceeds really the supply. The one thing I often find in domestic violence is that women coming out of those relationships don't have control of any of the finances. So when they need these attorneys to respond, often quickly, such as in a long-term protective order hearing, they don't have any money. I went into two long-term protective order hearings recently. Both of the abusers came in with attorneys. I was there with the women, did the best that we could, but this need is pretty great. The representation in a case like that, a long-term protective order hearing, costs between $2,500 and $5,000, according to what I have heard from both attorneys and women. In the contested divorce and custody cases, if applicable, usually there's about the same amount, $2,500 to $5,000 needed for a retainer to get a case started. Those cases contested often average $15,000 to $20,000 on a regular case. But one of the problems with domestic violence is that the abusers often bring those power and control tactics into court. They want to litigate everything endlessly, cause delays. The cases can drag on for years. And my understanding is that the cases can get up into the $100,000 range in cost to actually provide legal representation in those cases. So. I work with a lot of women in different economic brackets and different ethnic classes. Really, a wide variety of people come in to see me. But there's hardly anyone that has the funding available in a short amount of time needed to provide civil legal representation. And I did a quick, kind of in my head, in the last quarter, because the referrals seem to be up so much higher. So these are statistics taken really quickly from the notes that I take of about 40 referrals that I needed to make between October and December of 2009. There was one person that came in who actually had the funding available to hire a private attorney. One person borrowed the money from a friend to hire, and all the rest really were unable to come up with any funding to provide private civil representation. The accesses, and I can speak for Juneau only on this, I'm not sure statewide, Alaska Legal Services has had a funding cut, so they're currently not taking any family law referrals. So really, of the people who are coming in to see me that need help or a sliding scale fee, the only referral I have is the Alaska Network of Domestic Violence Sexual Assaults Pro Bono Program. And the other advocates statewide are the screening process, that the first step when the women come in and they are referred to that program. Again, often the women are coming in, a lot of stress, a lot of fear, written all over their body language, what they speak. One of the best parts of my job, and what keeps me motivated sometimes in these cases, is the fact when I'm able to sit with them and say, hey, guess what, we found someone to help you. We're going to be able to get you that order that's going to help you stay safe out in the community. An example of a case that I worked with recently, just to give you an idea, a young woman in her early 20s, she has one child between 2.5 and 3. Had a visit from the father of the child. He started to argue and physically struggle with the mom. The child was present, and the child was knocked against the wall during this struggle. Really got mom's attention. She was very upset by that, so she came into aware to get help with a protective order. He has a documented criminal history of abuse. So we were able to get a one-year long-term protective order in that case. She is also attending the Healthy Relationships class at AWARE, and that is designed as a preventative to help women be able to see these relationships before they get in too deeply involved. She works. She's a university student, so she's doing everything really that she can to try to not only get herself and her child in a safe situation, but to prevent this happening in the future. The problem is, at that point in her life, she doesn't have those thousands of dollars needed for legal representation. So it's really the reason I was so excited to be able to come speak with you today is the fact that I understand with the governor's proposal that there's looking for more funding for law enforcement, hopefully funding for the shelters, hopefully funding for more prosecutors. But if this end piece, the civil representation, is not available, this is a piece that's going to have to be in place for the lifetime of a child in a child custody case to keep that child safe. And it's critical to facilitate safe visitation with the abuser for the children. And also, in the cases of custodial interference, which are probably a little more common than you'd like to hear about in domestic violence situations, that custody order isn't in place. Law enforcement doesn't have the tools that they need in order to try to get the safe recovery of that child. That's really all I have to say today, but I want to thank you again for allowing me to be able to come speak with you.
Ms. Bennett, you're very welcome. My question would be surrounding a couple of questions. One, what's the geographic sort of extent of your coverage in Southeast? Do you go to Haines and Skagway and Sitka and so forth, or are you strictly focused on Juneau cases?
Well, Juneau serves 9 surrounding communities: Haines and Skagway, Yakutat, Pelican, Elfin Cove, Gustavus, Hoonah. I don't know if that's all 9, but there is a shelter in Sitka. They have some of the communities, and a shelter in Ketchikan, and they have some of the communities. So mostly what I'm focusing on is northern Southeast, although I do get calls from really all over. I don't know how they get my number, but they do.
And I'm just wondering whether the sort of the pro bono help that you have access to in Juneau isn't maybe a little greater than what's available in other communities. I'm just going to imagine that Juneau, from what I know from having lived in the town now for 8 years, isn't a little bit more engaged in this issue than perhaps other regions of the state, and maybe the need isn't greater elsewhere. I mean, I know it sounds like you're behind here, but I'm just sort of thinking out loud about the level of support you get from this community.
That's a little bit hard for me to say. I don't think there's a whole lot of attorneys in this community that are doing family law. Mm. So drawing from that group, you can usually only take one case at a time because these are often drawn out complicated cases. There are other attorneys in different fields that are volunteering. And I'm
but
thinking
you
that
you need that expertise, the family law expertise.
I don't want to dodge that question, but I really think that probably Christine or Carrie, or even Jen, who are really actively doing that attorney representation,
sure,
could give you a better answer on that.
Fair enough. It's just something that came to mind. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Senator Wilkowski? Thanks. No,
thank you.
I'm going to pull the microphone just a little bit closer. I have a softer voice, and I'm battling a cold.
Oh.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee member. My name is Jennifer King, and I am a staff attorney with the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence Sexual Assault Pro Bono Program. And I provide statewide representation to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, which means I get to travel to Dutch Harbor, to Barrow, to places all across our state. And I again want to reiterate and thank you for the time and opportunity to talk about civil legal needs. Anyone who is a victim of domestic violence can apply to our program. We receive most of our referrals from our legal advocates from our 18-member DVSA programs across our state. And because we have so many cases or so many applications to our program, we have had to create a priority case system when we're deciding which cases to place with our volunteer attorneys.
And are you the person that makes those decisions? I mean, who does the triage?
I am part of that triage. Christine Pate, Carrie Robinson, and 2 other people from our agency, including myself, sit on a case review team where we review our applications that we received. And generally, we try to do that every week to week and a half because we are receiving so many applications. And part of that process is we get the application, then we actually have to do an intake over the phone or in person. And so we're doing a lot of work that way. And then that's how we decide what to do with our cases. So typically what we do is we ask whether the survivor has children, what is the threat of harm to those children. For example, is there current or past threats of kidnapping? Is there ongoing physical or sexual abuse to that child? We also ask, is the lethality of the survivor's situation, what is that? Is there strangulation? Is there increased intensity of domestic violence in a short period of time? We look at whether the survivor has any limitations that that would make it more challenging to access the justice system, like immigrants who have limited or no English capabilities, or those who have cognitive or developmental delays. Because domestic violence touches all aspects of a survivor's life, we have many volunteer attorneys who are willing to do cases that are outside of the family law context. For instance, bankruptcy, consumer fraud, public assistance, those type of cases. And we find that those cases are a little bit easier to place with pro bono attorneys because, again, they are less time consuming than a family law case or a protective order case that has dynamics of DV and sexual assault. And so lastly, we ask whether this person will work well with our volunteer attorneys. As Carrie said, the Legal Advocacy Project has approximately 2,000 referrals to its program since its inception of May 1999. 60% of our cases do get placed with our volunteer attorneys each year in cooperation with the 60%.
60%. What happens to the other 40?
You know, it depends. Some actually, their goals change, so they might remain in a relationship and they don't need legal services. Sometimes they might be over our income guidelines that we have, that we follow. Other times it might not be a case that we can actually find a pro bono attorney for. Christine Pate might be able to speak better to that because she's the one that is primarily responsible for placing those cases.
Sure.
So in cooperation with the Alaska Bar Association, we have also provided 12 continuing legal education trainings for our pro bono attorneys. And over the course of the years, as Carrie said, we have established an attorney pool of 300 attorneys who are willing to volunteer for our program. And while we do not track exactly the amount of in-kind donation that these attorneys are providing for us since the inception of our program, we do estimate that it is in the millions of dollars over the lifetime of our program, given the amount of cases we have placed and the time it takes to do these cases. I would like to take an opportunity to identify at least two volunteer attorneys that I know who are in the audience today, and there might be more, and that's Mr. Ben Brown and Mr. Jim Shine.
Where's Mr. Shine? Thank you.
While our 60% placement rate is good, that means we still have a percentage of people with unmet civil legal needs. And it can be a challenge to place cases with our volunteer attorneys because the length of time that it does take to do these cases, especially those involving the dynamics of domestic violence and sexual assault. And I'll just give you an example of that, the ones that I deal with mostly. Often, child sexual abuse is disclosed within the context of domestic violence in a civil case that I'm doing. And these cases are very challenging because there's usually no physical findings of sexual abuse. There's no confession by the perpetrator to the police officer, and therefore there's no resulting criminal prosecution. So what does this mean? It means that it leaves the protection of our children in the family law setting, and that's how I end up getting those cases, so that we can have an opportunity to protect our children in the civil realm, since it's more difficult to do so in the criminal. Our program encourages our pro bono attorneys to work closely with our legal advocates in each of our member programs across the state. And we try to do so that we can provide a comprehensive services, a holistic representation. And in order to be successful of that, we spend our time training our legal advocates to learn how to screen the cases, make the referrals, provide safety planning for the clients, and also provide other supportive services that are outside the realm of our legal issue. We also have funding to train our volunteer attorneys, and we try to maintain relationships with other agencies. So all of these are critical to the success of our program. And as you can see, pro bono isn't really free. It takes funding to continue direct representation of clients and to continue our trainings for our volunteer attorneys and legal advocates. And it takes funding to break the cycle of violence so that every child does have a safe place to live. Thank you. And I do thank you for the opportunity to allow me to speak to this subject that is really near and dear to my heart and I've dedicated a lot of time to, and I will turn it over to Ms. Robinson again.
Okay, Ms. King, thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jen. So I wanted to follow up with that and point out that our project, while we have been fortunate to get federal funding, we are all federally funded and we receive no state funding to do this important work. And that definitely has, you know, limited our ability to entirely meet the need. I know I'm going to talk about the Alaska Immigration Justice Project, which is the only agency in Alaska dedicated to protecting the human rights of low-income immigrants and refugees. I'm very fortunate here to be here with Dan Rogers, who's one of our amazing pro bono attorneys, and I'm going to turn over to him to talk about his work.
Mr. Rogers, welcome to the committee. Could you just go ahead and put your name on the record?
Thank you. My name is Dan Rogers. I live in Anchorage, Alaska. I've been a member of the Alaska Bar since 1978, and I used to work over at the legal department of Arco and ConocoPhillips for 26 years until I retired a little over 2 years ago. And since then, I've been working at the Alaska Immigration Justice Project as a pro bono staff attorney. I just want to thank you for giving me the time to tell you why I think the work we do is so important. Last year, our office represented 700 Alaska clients. And of those, about 200 of them were victims of domestic violence, immigrants whose spouses or partners battered them, sexually assaulted them, or emotionally abused them. Often these victims are married to United States citizens who had failed to do the paperwork to allow their spouses to live or work in the United States. To make matters worse, the abusers often use the immigration system as a tool to help inflict the abuse. They threaten to report their spouse to immigration if the spouse goes to the police or other people to report the violence. Fortunately, Congress has amended the immigration law to include protections for victims of domestic violence and crime victims. The Violence Against Women Act is amended part of the immigration law, and also subsection U of section 101 of the immigration law, the so-called U visa provisions. However, these provisions of the law are complex, and they're in English. Many of our clients can't read English and don't understand the forms or the complexities of the law. Also, when these victims end up in deportation proceedings, they have a right to be represented, but at no cost to the government. So there is no public defender for people in immigration proceedings. They have to find their own attorney. Our office helps these victims of domestic violence by explaining the law to them, providing qualified interpreters through our Language Interpreter Center, preparing the necessary applications and representing them in immigration court when they're in deportation proceedings. This work's very intense and time-consuming. It often takes many meetings with a victim to build up trust and get their full story. But without work by qualified attorneys and paralegals and interpreters, these victims would remain stuck in these abusive relationships because they don't understand their rights under the immigration laws. And frankly, if they end up in deportation proceedings in immigration court, they really don't have a chance at all if they don't have a qualified attorney with them. Just recently, I represented a woman who was in an abusive relationship. She was living in a different state at the time. When she called the police after several months of being battered by her spouse, the police ultimately arrested her husband, but before doing that, they reported her to Homeland Security, where she was put in deportation proceedings. She was able to post bond, and after she was released from the detention facility, she came to Alaska to escape the relationship. And we were able to help her get her U visa, which allowed her to get out of the deportation proceedings in immigration court. Our office also provides outreach and training to inform immigrants of these rights and to educate law enforcement and the court systems on how domestic violence intersects with the immigration law. We also collaborate with advocates from shelters around the state to ensure awareness of immigration issues. Our office is located in Anchorage, but we have domestic violence clients all over the state: Juneau, Sitka, Fairbanks, Bethel, Barrow, and Dutch Harbor, etc. Like you've heard from the other folks here today, we also have a long waiting list. There are more clients than out there than we're able to help, and we should do more. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Tell me, how many staff attorneys at the Immigration Justice Project?
We have two full-time staff attorneys, and then I'm essentially a full-time pro bono staff attorney.
So you're a full-time volunteer?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not important to me.
Thank you for what you're doing. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, that concludes our presentation, and we're open for questions now.
This is kind of a global start, and I'm not sure which of the listeners could take on the question, but what do you estimate sort of the need is? If you could put sort of a number at what it would take in terms of attorneys to fill the need that comes in either to your program or to the Immigration Justice Project, you know, is it 3 attorneys? Is it 5? Is it 10? I mean, I'm just trying to get a feel for you know, numbers. If you just identify yourself so that
right.
We know on the transcript.
I was going to have Carrie or Christine start with that, and then I might be able to add in.
Sure.
Well, this is Carrie in Anchorage, and I'm pausing because it's so great to have someone ask that question.
Right.
I think it's really important that we look at what we need in this state. At a minimum, we need more staff attorneys, because although we've developed this great statewide pro bono program, there are many cases that are just too time-consuming and complex for a pro bono attorney, and so we really need dedicated, sustainable staff attorneys who have experience in doing this work. And I know that there are proposals out there to increase funding and for the first time provide some state funding to our project, and I think that would be a great start.
And anyone else want to add or amplify to Ms. Robinson's answer?
I just wanted to make a quick comment, because I do most of the direct representation in terms of having a full-time staff position with our agency. I do want to reiterate what Carrie did say. These cases, I get a lot of the more difficult cases that are harder to place with our pro bono attorneys because of the time. I've had one case in particular that I've had for the full 5 years that I've been with the agency, and it's not one of those cases where I'm in and then I'm out, I'm in and I'm out. I'm in it completely the entire time. And it has involved a lot of issues of child sexual abuse and domestic violence and continued litigation harassment in the court system. So I can say it would be nice to have more attorneys like that who can take on those difficult cases.
This is Dan Rogers from the Justice Project. I don't know how many more attorneys would need to meet all the needs, but we know we need another staff attorney. We're really looking for one, and right now we're not in a position to get one, but we desperately need one.
And the next question I have is, who covers the areas of, for example, of Fairbanks or Western Alaska, Nome, Bethel?
There are Alaska Legal Services offices in the area. I have found that I have been providing a lot of representation in Fairbanks because the attorney pro bono pool is smaller, and we find that across the state where there are some communities that have more active volunteer attorneys, and Fairbanks, the area of Fairbanks, I have now four cases, which is quite a bit for the, you know, considering that I'm doing statewide representation. And then I find that the peninsula, our peninsula like Homer, Seward, that area, it's a little bit more difficult to find attorneys there because there's just a smaller amount of attorney pool there. Sometimes it's based upon our referrals. Sometimes we are not receiving a lot of referrals from different shelters because they might be able to network in with their local attorneys. But there are some areas that are not, that I tend to provide more representation.
And I guess that was kind of getting back to the point I was trying to make about Juneau. I mean, I see Mr. Brown here, and I know he's active in a lot of different community things, and I just sense that there's people like that in Juneau where you have sort of people stepping forward, you know, just trying to help out, and I just wonder whether that same level of community participation exists in other parts of the state. It sounds like it doesn't for a variety of reasons.
Correct.
Sure, sure. Other comments, closing comments, wrap up?
And this is Carrie again in Anchorage, if I could add to that.
Sure.
I wanted to point out that while we have these great volunteer attorneys all around the state, it's really important. The success of our project has been to provide ongoing training, mentoring, and support for those attorneys, and that takes dedicated staff attorneys. And as I said before, for the entire state, we only have three attorneys in our office, which is just not meeting the need. Thank you.
And I mean, this has been a really valuable overview for us, myself as the Judiciary Chair, to get a feel for where we are in providing legal services for a community and sort of a side of the community that I've felt a lot of interest in over the years, both as a prosecutor and at the committee level. So thank you for coming forward. Thanks for being here. Good presentations. It's all preserved on tape for the state to watch over and over. If there's nothing else to come before the committee, we are adjourned.